Blog Talk Radio.
Unedited and uncut. And today we have a special deal going on here. I got the chat room open, and if anybody wants to talk, you know, on the chat room while this is going on, I'll be glad to talk to you. Okay, what I got here today is Finian Cunningham, and he's in East Africa, and you got to bear with this a little bit because the internet where he is not really good, so he'll cut out a little bit. You know, this is pre-recorded today, and he, you know, a couple hours ago we did this, and he'll fade in and out sometimes, and you got to bear with it. But Finian Cunningham has a lot to say. He's a journalist, Sputnik, Press TV, Strategic Culture. I mean, so many different places he's written for. And, you know, he's a respected journalist, and I'm glad to have him. He's a friend of the show. And so I'm really glad that I finally got this interview on. And I just have to find it, and you're gonna have to bear with it a little bit because I couldn't upload it for some reason or another. I'll find out why. So it's gonna go over my speaker, and sometimes it cuts out a little bit, and it'll come back on again. And it's worth a listen. I'm telling you, it really is. It's worth a listen. And we're gonna start this now, and we're going to listen to Finian Cunningham and myself, Tim Gatto, about a lot of things that are going on in the world the mainstream media just won't cover. So let's start it right now.
Okay, here we go. We're recording this. I'm with Finian Cunningham, and he's in East Africa, and he just wrote an article about Yemen, and it was on Strategic Culture, and it was very interesting about this proxy war kind of mentality that the mainstream media is throwing at everybody. There's some kind of proxy war against Iran and Saudi Arabia, and they're using Yemen as a stomping ground, which is kind of not true. And Dan, why don't you believe what the mainstream media is saying about Yemen? Finian, are you there? Yeah, well, why don't you... Yeah, I'm getting a poor network recording sign.
The various lights on the internet and machinery are.
set it up for another time? Yeah, I got a good tip on that. I wonder why all these different countries don't go to the UN and try to stop this thing because of the gross human abuses that they're heaping on the Yemeni people, and why hasn't the UN stepped in?
Trainers and parts, spare parts for the aircraft and mechanics and stuff like that. If they stopped it, that the war would be, Saudi Arabia could not prosecute the war in about 2 or 3 months because they would be running out of spare parts and couldn't get their air force in the air. You know. And that's what I think we should do. And there's a lot of American governors that want this war stopped. So we shall see, I guess.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, that picture of that kid.
Yeah, we'll see that.
Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I see that, yes, the Congress members are actually getting to kind of put some kind of strength on this Yemeni. This war has been going on since 2015, 3.5 years. And this war should be stopped. 3.5 years ago, 3 years ago. I mean, why is it not being a vigorous or the war to be stopped? The media negligence in any cause more than the end. It's just an absolute standard of, you know, the aggressors involved should be prosecuted as war criminals. I mean, the United States, Britain, and France, and the Saudis, they're aggressing that country. Now, there is this kind of a vigorous call for that, because a lot of it is because the Western media simply ignores that conflict. And so it's not really in the of the Western public to push their political representatives. I mean, we all recently, despite the lack of coverage, there's such an horrific human suffering. It has gone through the Western public, and there has been a public outcry, and some politicians now are pushing for some constraints on the war. But it's long overdue, and that's long overdue because the Western media completely neglected any coverage of the war and sort of human suffering.
Well, you know, the mainstream media here is controlled by the big corporations, the military-industrial complex. You see advertisements for Boeing, you know, on the mainstream media, and it's like, Who watching TV is going to go out and buy a Boeing? You know, it's like it's just a way to control them and manipulate them.
That war in the end. I mean, the Americans and the British have made an absolute killing in terms of selling weapons to Saudi Arabia as a result of that war. I mean, Saudi Arabia is always a big buyer of their weapons, but because of this war, the seals have escalated big time. I mean, the British, I saw a big... It's just because of the Yemen war, but they sold something like an extra $5 billion or $6 billion in weapons on top of their normal kind of supply to the Saudis. So this Yemeni war, as you were saying there, is a gold mine weapons company. It's still waiting Raytheon, Lockheed Martin, in the British case, the British Aerospace, the French, the Rafale jets, the Salt jets. So they're making an absolute killing, and their media definitely are falling into line in that they're not giving this coverage, because when they pack their advertising revenue and they're getting into trouble with government, it's, you know, I think a Western media cover-up of the horror in Yemen, and it is an absolute abomination. I mean, we're talking about, you know, millions of children on the brink of starvation because the country has been blockaded by the Saudis and their Western backers. I mean, there's food and medicines and fuel and water can't get into the country because of this blockade on the country, you know, by the US-backed, you know, coalition. And, you know, you have to say that, you know, it's really opposed to the definition of genocide, what's happening in that country, and it's an urgent, horrific story, yet the Western media have just been so negligent, criminally negligent, in giving it coverage, and they should, because it is a huge story, a horror story that involves Western government, and if Western media were actually in, instead of what they claim to be, they would be covering it, but they're not.
Yeah, and you know, there's a thing in the Nuremberg laws is warfare is a war crime, and that's exactly what Saudi Arabia is doing in the port city there. They're blocking aid from coming in, food from coming in, and siege warfare, and that's a war crime. And they never call it out in the mainstream media here. Are we still?
Yeah. I mean, if the Western media were actually doing their job, you know, journalists are, you know, they should be on this story all the time and claiming the Western government involvement in, you know, huge war crimes. But they're not. I mean, you know, but I'm just going to kind of sort of put this war in, put it this way. I mean, it all started, I mean, you can trace it back to the 2011 uprising across that region, and I was in Bahrain at the time, and Yemen was part of that whole upheaval. And then the incumbent so-called president of Yemen, Ali Abdullah Saleh, he was a Western puppet, a Saudi puppet, and an American puppet. But because of the uprising in that country, the Americans and the Saudis they sort of persuaded this guy that he has to give up power. He has to give some sort of transition to a more populist, more popular democratic representation. Now, his stand-in, the vice president at that time, was Mansour Hadi, and he took over as a transition president in 2012. Now, he was just a president on the way to a democratic kind of settlement of the country, and he hung on and refused to transition as he was supposed to do, you know, probably because he had the Western, countenance to do that. And then the uprising led by the Houthi rebels kicked this guy out in 2015, you know, about 3 years after he was supposed to transition. So they kicked him out. And what this war has been going on since March 2015, because the Saudis and the Americans and the British and the French want to reinstall that puppet, that President Mansour Hadi, who was notoriously corrupt. He wanted to be a president for life. He was sitting on the presidency kind of beyond his date that he's supposed to transition. So, you know what I mean? Then what's going on in Yemen is the Saudis want to reinstall the puppet that they had, and they just refused to accept that there was an uprising led by the Houthi that, pushed for a new democratic, or well, a relatively more democratic arrangement in Yemen. And that's what this war has been about. So they bring in the Iran factor, as they say, to make it out of a proxy war to try to justify this horrific blockade, these horrific airstrikes, indiscriminate airstrikes, and the starvation. They try to justify all that. This label that it's in Iran, there's an Iran proxy war. But in my opinion, Tim, and I've been following very closely, it's not at all. It's all about trying to overthrow a revolution that the West and the Saudis didn't like. That's what it's all about. And that's what makes this war all the more criminal. It's a criminal aggression.
Didn't the Houthis, when when the United States fought some war over there, Mali, the French had troops over in Mali. They said that Al Qaeda was there, and meanwhile they were Houthis too, right?
I don't know about that, Tim. I can't say anything about that. That's a new
rule
to me. I don't know.
Really, that's beyond anything about that,
you know? Yeah.
Yeah, it seems like, you know, I don't understand why Russia and China don't bring this up at the Security Council. And even in the General Assembly, and try to condemn what Saudi Arabia is doing. And they're the head, right now, Saudi Arabia heads the Human Rights Council, which is a joke in itself.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I think Russia and China have been pretty negligent about Yemen. I mean, they had a UN resolution, UN resolution 2216 in 2015. And it called on the Houthis to put down their weapons or something like that. You know,
one-sided.
one-sided whitewash of the situation. And I think Russia abstained from that veto. They should have vetoed that. They should that resolution. They should have vetoed that. I mean, you know, it was very private and very much tailored to the Saudi, the American, the British, French narrative of Yemen. And the Russians and the Chinese should be doing more at the UN to highlight this aggression. But we'll see what happens. I mean, they're going to have peace talks in the next few weeks. And the Americans are now, Jim Mattis is now pushing for these talks and negotiations and ceasefire. I don't want to go into too much to hold this conversation on Yemen, but I'm not really sure about that. In fact, I'm very skeptical about that proposal because, in my view, Jim, the solution is for the Saudi Arabia and the Emiratis and whoever else is in their sort of so-called coalition, plus the Americans, they should just stop committing aggression against this country. There's no need for the negotiation. This puppet president, so-called president, was kicked out 3 years ago because he was a corrupt puppet. You know, what the Americans and the British are seemingly to do is to try to create this framework where the Houthis now will have to talk with this exiled puppet, and they'll probably try to come up with some compromise to kind of like interfere in the politics of the country. I mean, Mansour Hadi, the exiled president, shouldn't even be at the table, and neither should the Saudis. The point is that the country is being aggressed in a really criminal way. You don't just talk with criminals. Criminals should stop what they're doing. And in fact, if it was my view, where they should be prosecuted. you just don't sort of say, okay, well, you've been bombing this company for 2.5 years. Man, can you talk to these guys? I mean, that to me is that's a quite a perverse framework. But the Americans are pushing it. And I think they're trying, the British too, I think they're trying to, in a way, undermine the Houthis through negotiations as opposed to a war, aggression. They're trying to use the route of negotiations to try to get the Houthis to compromise with the old regime. And I think that's what they're doing, you know.
Yeah, and another thing, the United States is becoming a criminal empire. Like, they have peace talks going on now, Russian-led peace talks about Afghanistan, and the United States doesn't even want to be involved. And not only that, the United States pulled out of the International Criminal Court because they knew if they stayed in it that they were going to be charged with war crimes. So this is the American government has become totally irrational, and the mainstream media are covering all this stuff up, and most of the people don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
And that hurts me, because America used to stand for something. Now it stands for nothing. And this is why people are, you know, Trump says make America great again. Well, he's not making America great again. He's making America one of the biggest criminal elements in the planet. And it's almost like when Adolf Hitler ran around Europe killing people. I mean, we're doing the same thing.
Well, that sort of pardoning of Saudi regime last week was pretty despicable. I mean, Trump's kind of rationalization was pretty despicable. In effect, I mean, saying that, you know, we've got too much business interest, and okay, so we know we're killing this guy brutally, but, you know, we can't afford to lose the business. I mean, that really kind of, you know, sort of demonstrates the priorities of the U.S. government, especially under Trump. You know, it's all about commerce and transaction and the hell with any kind of, you know, legal standards or human rights. But, I mean, to be honest, then, like, it was always pretty, there was a lot of that going back years ago. I mean, Trump was more brazen about it, more blatant. But, you know, there's no pretense of covering up or giving a little bit of a pretense of human rights. I mean, he's just been really brazen about it, you know.
Well, you know, it was so funny. Everybody's talking about Tulsi Gabbard saying that America is Saudi Arabia's bitch, and I can't believe she came out and said that. Yeah. Excuse me?
Because it was good. You couldn't believe it because, well, it was good. You liked it.
Yeah, I loved it. I mean, you know, and that's she had to say something like that so it would gain media attention and bring this issue to the forefront. You know, that's why I think she used those words.
Yeah, I mean, you're better aware than me, but was there a lot of media coverage of her remark?
Mm-hmm.
Did she cause a lot of media, you know, a lot of attention? Did she get a lot of media attention then?
Yeah, and that's why she used those abrasive words, because she wanted that media attention, and she knows how to get it.
Yeah.
And it's great, you know, and we got some other people coming into Congress and the Senate. And Rand Paul, as much as I don't like his domestic policies, he's spot on when it comes to foreign policy. And there's a lot of other people that are just sick and tired of these endless wars. And something's got to be done because the United States, the American infrastructure is falling apart.
Yeah. Well, did you see that bigger thing there last week that was published by, I think it was Brown University, wherever that is, somewhere in the United States. I can't say where it is, so I don't know. But they did a study calculating on DOD data, DOD figures, and they calculated that the wars of, against terrorism, so-called wars against terror, over the last 17 years, have racked up $6 trillion in debt. $6 trillion. It's hard to see how a country can really sustain itself without kind of, you know, I mean, without sort of extravagant, that wastage of money, $6 trillion in 17 years. You know.
Well, you know, this is what happened to the Roman Empire. This is what happened to the Soviet Union. I mean, it gets so top heavy with military and spending on the military. And the only people who are making any money on it are the defense contractors and some corporations. And meanwhile, the people have to pay for this. And eventually, everything's going to fall apart, the same way it did in Rome, the same way it did in Moscow.
Well, that's where some of these new Democrats are interesting and potentially leading to a better politics. I mean, you mentioned Tulsi Gabbard and there's a few others. You know, I mean, Tulsi Gabbard seems to be very critical about this military extravagance every year. And even though she's an expat, you know, she's been in Iraq two times, wasn't she? But she is one of the people that is able to see it for what it is, which is a huge hemorrhaging of American resources to a completely destructive nihilistic purpose of these wars. And it's great to see that. I mean, will these people get stronger, or will they be bought off? Well, you know, this is the age old kind of dilemma or conundrum. You know, that they start out with very strong progressive views, but you know, over time, there's a tendency for them to be co-opted and bought out, as you said in your quote to me in that article that I did for RT. She might be co-opted by the Democrat Party establishment. But at least at this stage, you know, what she's saying is very promising, and it's great to see somebody being so straight-headed and straight-talking about this huge hemorrhaging of the American economy. And sorry, Tim, just to kind of, I mean, Medea Benjamin of Code Pink wrote an article last week, which I thought was very apt. And she said that, you know, if the new Democrats really want to, in the House, if the new Democrats in the House want to actually really change the politics of home at home, and to regenerate the community, regenerate the American economy, they have to, they're compelled to face up to this military orgy every year, you know, and that is the challenge. Can these people like Tulsi Gabbard and others, can they really focus on this and galvanize the public around an agenda to completely slash this $700 billion a year spent on military and wars? It's over half the discretionary budget every year. It would completely overwhelm what is spent on healthcare and education. I mean, if we want to kind of, you know, I think understand why the American society and the economy seems to be failing, it's because of this completely perverse priority of waging wars around the world instead of looking after their own. And Trump actually promised all that when he was getting elected, but I mean, the guy has completely betrayed his platform or his manifesto, you know.
And, you know, what's new? You know, all these people do it. They all promise you the world and they give you nothing because they're being paid off by these big corporations. The only ones that's making money are these big corporations and the politicians and the lobbyists. And it's so hard to mount some kind of effective, blowback on them, you know. But people are starting to really become aware, even in South Carolina, which is deeply Republican. I talk to people all the time, and they say, you know, we spend 55% of our discretionary budget on the military. And they know this, and it is getting around, and people are becoming aware. And everybody's worried about Trump trying to become a dictator. And now, he had a big falling out with the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, John Roberts. And you know, this is the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. Now he's screwing with them. This guy is unhinged because if he gets the Supreme Court angry at him, he's not going to be able to get anything done.
I don't know. He definitely seems to be a bit cuckoo, Trump. I mean, the whole Thanksgiving stuff about, you know, indulging his ego about, you know, Thanksgiving for my great economy and all this stuff. I mean, the guy seems to be a complete maniac. I mean, it's a sad situation. Then, I mean, I think the American people don't love them, and I really, really have such huge solidarity and sympathy with them. But I think we just don't have a political outlet for their grievances. Somebody like Trump comes up to a lot of alienation and a lot of discontent with the establishment, like the Republican and the Democrat establishment and Hillary Clinton. And all. I mean, that's understandable, and I think they're, you know, I in some ways I admire the way they went off to reach out to a complete outsider, but you know, there never seems to be a political leadership that merits the vast majority of these needs and their grievances, and that's why I'm hoping that we'll be a socialist party, you know, a party committed to working class issues, getting workers good pay, good jobs, good, you know, health care, what have you, pensions, and, you know, working class people, because they're all, you know, of all of us around the world are just living from paycheck to paycheck, we're workers, you know, and then that's what we need in America, that's what we need everywhere. But if there was such a party or, you know, some kind of like leadership giving vent to those grievances, I think it would be a runaway success. I mean, I think people would really tap into that, even if they didn't really consider themselves to be socialists. And there's been decades of brainwashing about, you know, demonizing socialism. But I think if people, you know, I think people would really mobilize behind that kind of agenda, a working people's agenda. They would really mobilize behind it. I mean, Trump is a sort of a way to prove of that, I think, because people, you know, it showed that people were really ready for an alternative. Now, he has let them down, and I think he would agree with that, and he has let them down. He was a bit of a charlatan, a demagogue, and he let them down. But I think by voting for Trump doesn't mean to say that the American people, in my opinion, that doesn't mean to say that they're all right-wing nativists, you know, far-right. No, it's all of it. It's just more of a sign of, you know, pretty much a lack of choice, you know, options. And they went for some guy who kicked the system a bit, but he turned out to be a bit of a, you know, a bit of a charlatan. And of course, Bernie Sanders could have very well have tarnished these voters, but he was stitched up by the DNC and Clinton and all that. So, there, to me, Tim, sorry to kind of go on too much, but I'll just say that I think there's great hope. I mean, I think there's a great sway of a scrumptious of people out there that would really, really mobilize behind a progressive, democratic direction, you know, leadership, party, whatever. But they just haven't got that direction yet. You know, there isn't a party yet. Well, maybe these new Democrats can sort of somehow catalyze the way towards that. But if they did, I don't say it. And I think that's why that's what the party would be really fear.
There were so many candidates, you know, there were like three or four in the congressional candidates that called themselves Democratic Socialists, and they got elected. The progressive wing of the Democratic Party are openly embracing, you know, the Democratic Socialist thing. And I think either the Republican Party is going to split, and I think maybe the Democratic Party is going to split, you know. And if that happens, that would be a wonderful thing.
Yeah. Well, that is great. I mean, that's good news. I mean, I didn't realize that was the case. What you just said there about candidates only, espousing socialist, that is great. That's very heartening. And I think it will come, you know, it will. We have to go through a lot of pain, a lot of destruction, but, you know, I've got great faith in humanity that we can rationally get our way out of this. And the only way out of this, in my view, is some sort of organized, planned economy. You know, call it socialism, you know, but it's got to be an organized, planned economy that really, you know, meets the needs of working, ordinary working people. And I think when we'll get there, remember the old saying, Tim, like, you know, it's either socialism or barbarism.
Yeah.
You know,
they got...
In German, was Elizabeth? Yeah. But anyway, I think we're at that juncture. It's either, like, you know, either in this mood of complete destruction and barbarism, or are we trying to solve the situation? And the only way to solve it is to organize democratic, you know, politics and economics, and not to be, then we're getting into socialism.
Yeah, what's going on here is that Ro Khanna, who's a congressman from California, and Bernie Sanders, who's a senator from Vermont, they introduced a bill. They're introducing a bill calling on Walmart to pay its people $15 an hour because the Walmart workers have to rely on food stamps and Medicaid. And meanwhile, Walmart's making tons of money, and the government, it has to subsidize their workers because they're not getting paid a living wage. So they were going to introduce this on Amazon, and Amazon broke and started paying its people $15 an hour. And now Walmart's probably going to break because they don't want the, you know, and they'll be paying $15 an hour. And what's going to happen is people have more money, they're going to spend more money, and it's going to be a win-win situation.
Well, you know, people say, Tim, like, there's socialism for the rich and capitalism for the rest of us. You know, these corporations are really, you know, they're completely indulged with subsidies from by us. You know, we pay the workers crap wages, and then we subsidize their marginalized, their exploitation by trying to give them some sort of a, you know, food stamps or you know, social welfare. I mean, it's socialism for the rich and capitalism for the rest of us, and we've got to turn that around, you know, to be the opposite.
You know, everybody's starting to realize this, the American myth that if you work hard and you're a good worker and you apply yourself, that you're going to end up in the middle class and everything's going to be great. And meanwhile, wages are going down. The people are working more hours. Activity is up, but the wages are stagnant, and everybody's really getting sick of this. And if, what's going to happen is if there's a crash in the stock market or in the economy, things are going to come to a head, and I believe it's going to happen very soon.
Situation is really a bit, well, it's like a holocaust of people, lonely people. You know, you look at these people from California living in tents in some parking lot, you know, with these fires and other you know, workers living in car parks because they can't afford homes. And I mean, there is a social holocaust going on, and it's really grim. And I don't mean rosy, but I do think it's got to be, we can sort of harness this in a good way if we get organized and, you know, actually control, you know, actually take control of government and the economy in America, and not just America, but in Europe. I mean, like, out of this misery and huge suffering, we can make our way forward. I think we have to. And we can, you know, so it's terrible, and I don't sort of, you know, need to gloss over it or try to make it sound like all very, rosy and, you know, it's easy. It's terrible what's going on, you know, the destruction of society and lives and families, but I think, you know, some way to get from this terrible crisis into something better, you know, and I think socialist organized is got to be the way forward, you know.
I got a Facebook page, Socialists of America, and I'm getting so many hits on that lately. And people are coming together. I'm even getting hits from American Socialist Party. You know, so people are getting interested in it. And I think that that we have to do something, because corporate control of government is nothing but fascism. And that's what's happening here in the United States. We're a totally fascist nation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think that's not Exaggerating what the situation, I think, you know, what you said there is fairly accurate in a true reflection on the situation. It is a fascist, a corporate fascist, you know, country that we're living in. It's all for corporations, and the oligarchy are creating it, and then the rest of us are just, you know, dying and suffering, and it's just a horrible, like, fascist violence against ordinary people. I mean, you know, I'm looking at figures in England, like the UK, and man, like, what a horrible, you know, what a horrible degeneration of that society. I mean, you know, there are just huge communities and old towns and cities just completely deprived and no jobs, nothing. Like, it's like trying to be disrespectful for African countries, but it's like a third world country. I saw a figure, Tim, I have to confirm it, but he said the 10 poorest regions in the whole of the European Union, 8 of them are in the UK. You know, like, it's a manifestation of the future of where we're all going. It's kind of a nihilistic, completely, you know, shelled, gutted sort of communities where nobody's got work and everybody's living hand to mouth and other food banks. And this is the kind of corporate fascist world that, you know, they're creating. The elite, the 1% or less, are doing fine. There's no oligarchy, plutocracy. And for the majority of the world, we're kind of, you know, we're just rubbish, human rubbish.
Yeah, and I think people are, I really think people are waking up. And, you know, I it's good that Trump's the president, because everybody's got their eye on him. And everybody's starting to learn things because they're afraid of him. And the more that he speaks and does crazy things, the more people pay attention. And that's what we need. We need them to pay attention, because everybody's so busy working, and they're working 2-3 jobs just to put food on their table. And they're not getting paid where they should be getting paid. And we're the richest economy on earth. And we, 40% of the people in the United States are below the poverty line. And that's ridiculous. And it can't go on like this. It just can't.
Yeah. It's something sustainable. I mean, Democrat, Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez said a good one recently, stated, yeah, you know, we've got sort of like a lot of employment. Well, that's because everybody's working 2 or 3 jobs. You know, I thought it was a pretty good statement, you know. You know what I mean? Like, oh yeah, the unemployment figures are way down, the employment figures are up, or whatever. You know, because people are working 2 or 3 jobs.
Yeah.
But you know, the thing that I find really, infuriating is that you see that, you know, the American media. I mean, the Democrat Party, one thing with perception, maybe, yeah, I'm wrong, but in my perception, the media and the Democrat Party, the sort of main CNN giving any really hard-hitting reportage from the investigation into how working people are being destroyed for exploitation and, with abysmal conditions. I mean, they're part of the problem, they're not to be surprised, but, that's what it makes it a little bit harder to get organized, because the media is there to try to, dumb us down and to, sort of obfuscate the situation, which is a glaring situation as we were just talking about. But the media and the Democrat leadership don't ever focus on these really important, urgent issues. They're all kind of really peripheral, nonsensical stuff,
Well, Vinny, we're 48 minutes into this, and I know that, I think we talked about a lot of things, and a lot of things that are wrong with this country, and, I don't want to keep you too long. I want you to come back on again, and I'm going to get this thing published, and I'll send you the link when I do. And hopefully this recording that I'm using will come out right. It's a pleasure talking to you, because you and me, we're both on the same track, that's what I believe in. And we see it, and I think a lot of other people are starting to see it too. And politics, the Democrat Party is primarying their own people, and that's how Cortez got to be a congresswoman, because she primaried this guy who had that seat in her district, had that seat for years, and he was supposed to be a big shot in the Democratic Party, and she primaried him. She was a waitress at a bar, and she won the primary, so she got the Democratic nomination. And this is what's happening in the United States. People are sick and tired of these corporate Democrats, and they're primarying them. And the more, we're running out of time, Finian. We're running out of time. There's going to be a war. The economy's going to crash. Something's going to happen. And we need to move fast. And people need to have a sense of urgency, because, we're really in dire straits.
Yeah, well, I totally agree with you there. Like, time is of the essence, and it's an emergency situation. And these crazy oligarchs can just try to start a war to completely distract or to divert the social, the social pressure that's building, with their backs up against the wall because of the social pressure, the demand for socialism, proper democracy in the economy. These people can do anything. Try to start a war with Russia or China, or Iran, just to, take the heat off. So, but then that's why and I keep saying it to you, and I really mean it sincerely. Like, you see, your kind of show is absolutely vital to the public awareness and, the mobilizing all public knowledge and public criticism and you're doing the kind of media, corporate media are completely neglecting. I mean, that makes it a little more difficult because you don't have the resources and to reach the numbers that you should, but you're doing it and it's really admirable what you do,
But, as long as I got people like you and Kiriakou and Paul Craig Roberts and Stephen Lemon and all these other people coming on the show, and maybe we'll get more ratings, because people want to hear the alternative to the news that they're getting, because they know it's all lies and propaganda.
Yeah, well, I hope we're doing that. I mean, that's why we're doing what we're doing, But, So, Tim, anyway, look, I think I've got a few. I hear the dog calling here. It's thing to learn.
I gotta take him for a walk. Okay, Steve. Hey, thanks for coming on the show, and let's do it again. And let's make it a regular thing because people like to listen to you. Keep your head up because journalists aren't safe anymore.
I know. Tim, with this whole Khashoggi thing, that's another aspect of why Trump's attitude is really deplorable, because it's really just saying, you're a connector. You can do it, as long as you've got enough commercial interests, or, it's really deplorable, despicable thing that he's kind of a leash. And I'm telling you, it's also, when Khashoggi was killed, I think everybody felt the kill,
Trump is a disgusting, horrible person, and journalists aren't safe. So keep your head on a swivel. And watch your back.
Because that time in Bahrain.
90 seconds.
In a way, it was similar, because I was called upon to go to the immigration, a government building, under completely false pretenses. I was told to regularize some visa issue, and I went there, and the next thing, I was taken out of the sort of main
60 seconds.
I went to a sort of side office with police guy, and that's where they revealed to me that they didn't like what I was writing about, and they said, you've got 24 hours to get out of the country. Now, luckily, I got out of the country, but do you know what I mean? These people do operate in a really, in a really criminal, deceptive way. And when Khashoggi was brought to that, and then assassinated him, killed, it made me remember the way I was tricked and brought in, and, I got off.
Yeah, well, you be careful, and, I'm going to let you go, and thank you for coming on the show, and, you're very incisive.
Well, thanks a lot. I hope I said something of interest to the readers, and thanks very much, Tim. I hope Siri is okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Give her my best.
Okay, she's right here, so,
Hi, Sam.
Hello, my dear. I've been a bit under the weather yesterday, so just to say, welcome back to the.
Thank you.
Welcome back. Hello, my dear.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, so you take care of this. Keep the chin up.
Okay, thanks, Finian. And you too.
Yeah.
Keep fighting.
Okay, man. I will.
Bye-bye. Okay, that was... I know it's a little hard to
yeah.
hear it.
That
was great.
Yeah.
You know, it was a little hard to hear, and so, you know, I'm glad if you listen to it, I'm glad you stuck with it.
Okay, yep.
And so that's about it for the show, and... you know, if you can hear what he said, it was very incisive, you know, and insightful. And you know, all I can say is he'll be on next Saturday and every Saturday, I think. Paul Craig Roberts is going to come on the show, and I got some more guests coming up. And this is the end of. And, you know, I want to tell you that, you know, I appreciate anybody podcasts this or listens to it or shares it with other people. Okay, so like I said to Finian, and like they say on Redacted tonight, keep fighting.